Welcome to episode 95 of Practical Defense, Configuring Your Workspace for Safety. Welcome to the Practical Defense Podcast, where you'll learn practical approaches to staying safe in our increasingly dangerous urban environments. I am your host, Alex Addix. This week, our topic covers some ideas on how to configure your office or workspace for escape and safety. This is an incredibly important consideration for anyone who has direct reports, sees patients, or deals with the public. But before we get into it, we have a few other interesting items to note. First, I'm running a defensive tactics course seminar in just a few weeks. It'll be on Saturday, October 17th. We'll cover the basics, plus some really interesting conflict scenarios and some gun disarms. Pre-registration is required for this class, so stop by my site at alexhaddix.com/class and sign up. Next, I also wanted to bring up another example of an idiot putting people's identity at risk. I first heard about this on the Buzz Out Loud Tech podcast and dug a little deeper from there. What happened was an employee at a bank gathered up personal information of 1,300 customers, and sent it to the wrong account on Gmail. Now, this information included names, addresses, social security numbers, and loan information. He apparently was trying to send it to himself and typed in the wrong address. This guy's an idiot and a moron, which is a bad combination when you have access to critical personal financial information. Now, first, internet email is completely insecure. It was never intended to be private or secure. It uses a methodology called store and forward. When you send an email, it bounces through who knows how many servers before it arrives at the destination. All of these servers receive the email, open it up, read it, and then send it on. Every single one. Hackers, thieves, and even the government agencies set up servers so they can scan these emails for keywords and information that they're looking for. I've seen this happen. You know, this is nothing new. Now, remember that I spent years working in computer security, researching hacking methods, and working with computer viruses. Back in the early 90s, a friend of mine had a small site dedicated to cheese. He walked away from his computer without securing it, and another friend thought it would be funny to send an email from his personal account with a bunch of government keywords. So he sent an email from his account with words like bomb, explosives, named a few choice locations, and biohazard. You know, things like that. He ended the spoof email with, "Come visit my site if you want any of this stuff." Now, this was in the early days of the web, and my friend's site was small, so he used to get maybe about 100 visitors a week. Within 2 days, his visitors jumped to over 400. All of the IPs tracked back to .gov domains. Now, for those that don't know, a .gov domain is exclusive to the U.S. government. Now, he was pissed. It was a really nasty prank. And again, this is an entirely true story, and I personally witnessed it, the email and the results. And what this means is that the government was scanning, back in the early 90s, the government was scanning emails for keywords looking for terrorism. The way email is sent has not changed. It is still completely insecure. What has changed is the sophistication of the technology and the hackers and the thieves. So again, email is not secure. Email is not private. And it's easier to mine email for sensitive information than ever before. Now, put in context that this idiot is sending information including names, addresses, social security numbers, and loan information through that system. You see my point? He may as well have printed them and handed them out on a street corner. In my eyes, this is criminal negligence on the behalf of the employee and the bank. And a bank should know better. So why was this employee sending this critically private information over a public and unencrypted system in the first place? Was he trying to steal these identities? Was he trying to steal his contact list because he's quitting and moving to another institution? There is no way that anyone who has two brain cells would approve this as policy for handling sensitive customer data. This was never addressed in the article, but I really hope law enforcement is looking into this. Oh, And the bank is suing Google to shut down the email account of the person who mistakenly received the information. I put a link to the full article in the show notes. Well, that was kind of a quick tip on email security, but I hope you get the point of this. Actually, there are two main points. First, email is not secure. And second, you need to guard your personal information as best you can. Consider signing up with an identity theft protection service and never, ever, never, ever just hand out personal information. Always try to keep as much information to yourself as possible. As we've demonstrated in the past, all it takes is one idiot to blow it for thousands or even millions of people. These companies need to stop saying, oops, sorry, and walk away when they have just put your financial livelihood at risk for the rest of your life. I want to start seeing some criminal prosecutions for mishandling this type of information. Okay, off my soapbox again. And we'll be right back with looking at configuring your office to help make you safer.
England, Wales, Scotland, Australia, Canada, and 12 other industrialized and largely disarmed nations have higher violent crime rates than the U.S. This is according to a Dutch Ministry of Justice multinational survey. According to that survey, England and Australia are twice as vicious as America, with higher rates of robberies, muggings, and assaults. Switzerland, a well-armed nation, has a violent crime rate about the same as ours. Disarmed countries are dangerous countries, and America's few disarmed cities are the most dangerous in the Union. This is no coincidence. Arm yourself with facts to strip the gun control industry bare. Visit gunfacts.info and get your free copy of Gun Facts. Called Indispensable by Cam Edwards of NRA News, Gun Facts is your rapid reference guide to debunking gun control myths and shaming politicians into obedience. www.gunfacts.info.
Welcome back. So let's get into the main topic for this episode. We spend an average of one-third of our day at work. Many of us work at a desk or behind a counter. We interact with coworkers, direct reports, and customers. This topic is tied to planning your escape route when you're at a restaurant, which we covered just a few weeks ago. But why should you be more concerned when you visit a public place? You spend more time at your workplace than you do at a restaurant or a store. So how is your office or workspace configured? What is between you and your primary escape route? And by that, I mean the door. Most office environments are configured so that when you're sitting at your desk, you face the door. Your back is to a wall or a window. Your guests sit across from you with their backs to the door. From a personal security perspective, this is horrible. There should be no obstructions or other people between you and the door. But why? Quite simply, you never know how someone is going to react. Sure, you can expect some civility in the workplace, but how well do you really know the people you work with? When I take a long-term contract, only a few select people know what I do on my personal time. I don't talk about my martial arts, I don't talk about my hunting, or firearms, or even this podcast. I would say that 3/4 of my current team don't know who I really am. And I dare say that the listeners of this podcast know more about who I really am than the people I see every day at the office. If the project is really short, like a few months, I don't tell anyone anything. It's not that I don't want to share, but it's a fact of the general business environment. I live and work in Los Angeles. Guns and gun ownership are not accepted in the corporate culture here. I worked for one person for a few years that I am certain would have fired me if he or she knew that I hunted. Is that prejudice wrong? Hell yes. It's probably even illegal. However, it's really hard to prove, and for job security, it's just easier for me to keep my mouth shut. When people do learn that I hunt, they usually say something like, "Oh, you killed Bambi?" And my reply is normally something like, "Well, Bambi tastes good." I don't lie. If I was asked point blank, I would respond truthfully. I just don't share. I don't volunteer my personal information because I know it would not be accepted and would probably result in a much shorter term of employment. Does what I do on my own time impact my performance at work? No, of course not. But that has nothing to do with social stigmas. The point I'm trying to make is that unless you go over to your coworker's home for dinner, you attend their kids' birthday parties, and go camping with them, you really don't know them. You only know the work version of them. The information I keep close, my martial arts, my personal protection training, and my hunting, is mild and completely legal. But what if your coworker is hiding a drug addiction, is struggling with depression, or is involved in some sort of criminal activity? People tend not to share that type of information, and if asked directly, would probably deny or lie about it. So keep in mind how little you actually know about your coworkers and employees. Where do you want to sit when you have to give them bad news? Do you know what's going to trigger something in them? Do you know what's going to make them snap? When you service the general public, you often don't even know their first name, much less what makes them tick. So consider the following scenarios that come up in the workplace often. You must reprimand an employee. The employee had a complaint filed by another employee or a customer. Or this person showing up late to work on a regular basis. Or their work is of poor quality. There are hundreds of reasons you need to meet with an employee that needs corrective action. You have to tell the employee that you're cutting their pay. Now, this is a reality of the current economic environment. Heck, I had my pay cut by 5% 6 months back. The company forced all the contractors into new agreements at a lower rate. There was no negotiation. It was, here's the new rate, take it or leave it. I was grateful the contract just wasn't terminated and that the reduction was only 5%, but I was still pissed and hurt at the reduction. It's kind of a strange feeling being both grateful and pissed at the same time. Or how about this? You have to tell a coworker that you won't be able to deliver the material or information they asked for when they asked for it because your priorities have been shifted. Now that never happens, does it? So now this person is going to miss their own deadlines, which will impact their annual performance reviews, which will impact their bonus or raise or promotion or whatever. In a clinical setting, what if you have to give a patient bad news? Now, this can be anything from a prognosis that he or she needs additional treatment or that he or she can't have more pain meds for another hour. You also have to interact with the family of patients in a clinical setting. Family members can react violently to bad news regarding patients that are actually being served. And what if you work in a retail environment? You deal directly with the general public on a daily basis and you have no idea who walks in that door or how they're going to react. I've seen customers throw things because they didn't get credit for an expired coupon. I've seen screaming and yelling over not having an item in stock or because a table at a restaurant isn't quite right. And I've personally been physically attacked by a customer. Yeah, I've been the victim of workplace violence. The short version of the story is that I was 19 and working in a retail store selling computer software. The store had a 30-day return guarantee, and he said that a new version had come out within this 30-day period, and he just wanted to swap it for the later version. And all of that was part of the policy. The problem was, he had actually purchased the software over a year ago. It was within the month on the receipt, but it was off by a full year. He was trying to pull a scam, hoping I wouldn't notice the year. When I refused the exchange, he reached over the counter, grabbed me by the tie, and pulled me into his face so he could yell at me. Yes, there was once a time when you wore a coat and tie to sell computer software. I think that was the time between when man discovered the rock and fire. Anyway, he caught me by complete surprise. I wasn't looking at him when he did it. I had my head down, putting his box back together. So you could say my awareness was low. I was so shocked by the unexpected explosion that I was stunned and incapable of reacting. When he finally released me, I just stepped back and out of his reach and called 911. I was lucky he only yelled at me and didn't strike me with anything. I learned and grew from the experience, and ever since, I move much faster to defend myself. Anytime you put yourself between someone and something they want, be it money, meds, a discount, a purchase, or anything, you create friction. That friction can spark a violent reaction. So if you consider how little you know about your coworkers, employees, and customers, You want to avoid placing obstacles between you and the door or an escape route. You have no idea what innocent little thing might set them off. If you work in an office, position your desk so that you have a clear path to the door and the employee, patient, family, or customer, or whatever, must go around the desk to get to you. Let them run the obstacle course while you twinkle-toe your way to safety. If you work behind a counter at a retail or convenience store, keep the floor clear behind the counter. Junk can accumulate down there. You want sure footing if you need to flee or just get out of arm's reach. You also want more than one way out. Often counters are set up with only one way out. If you can, talk to the manager or owner to see if they can open the other end for safety concerns. Now, under normal circumstances, a well-adjusted person will take rejection or disappointment like a normal, well-adjusted person. The problem is, you don't always know whom you're really dealing with. This is just one of the topics we cover in our workplace violence prevention courses. Beyond instruction on how to configure your office and workspace, we also cover methods to de-escalate rising conflicts or steps to avoid them altogether.
Gun Rights Radio Network has the best pro-Second Amendment, pro-gun rights podcast available on the net. The podcasts are absolutely free when subscribing using iTunes or Zoom Marketplace. Or if you want, you can just listen from the website. Make sure you visit gunrightsradio.com to subscribe. Podcasting freedom, one episode at a time.
Alrighty. In this episode, I gave a bunch of examples and scenarios to drive home two key points. First, you do not know your coworkers as well as you think you do. And second, configure your office and workspace so that your exit path is free of obstructions. As always, don't forget to check out my monthly column on taekwondotimes.com. It's called Raising Awareness. If you have any tips you'd like to share with everyone, a comment on a show, or if you would like to suggest a topic for an upcoming episode, write into podcast@alexaddicts.com. I'd love to hear from you. Until next time, stay aware, stay safe. Practical Offense is a member of the Gun Rights Radio Network at gunrightsradio.com. And that does it for this episode. Thank you for downloading and listening to the Practical Defense Podcast. For questions, commentary, and topic suggestions, send an email to podcast@alexaddicts.com. That's podcast@alexaddicts.com. And if you ever want to train with me, look me up on the web at alexaddicts.com.
Music by Kevin MacLeod.